Chapter 26. Zara. The nature of radiant magic has ever been considered a scholarly pursuit, Edna writes, her flowing script dancing across the yellowed page in years-old ink. In reality, it is more of an art, an ability born of passion and feeling rather than science. The conclave, for all its red tape and formulae, has never been able to grasp this simple truth, opting instead to box itself in with soulless bureaucracy rather than to set itself free with the spirit of innovation. I turn the page, reading by the light of the fire burning in the hearth. I postulate that is precisely why the Cabal has been able to create such extraordinary works of artifice and spellcraft, not because we are exceptionally skilled mages, but because we have a more intimate relationship with source energy, born from experimenting in ways that the Conclave would never have allowed. The spells contained in this volume will never be found anywhere else in all of Tarsinium. They are the result of years of research and risky experimentation, and are, in my humble opinion, much more potent than any of those taught at the Academy in Tarsus. Detailed descriptions can be found in the following pages, cross-referenced with my other spell books and ledgers. This, above all else, is my magnum opus, my life's work. May these spells be used to serve the greater good, even long after I am gone. The next page is a table of contents, outlining the dozens of spells contained within the book. Scanning the text, I find one that looks particularly interesting and flip to that section, drinking in the words like a woman dying of thirst. There are spells I would have never even dreamed of at my days in the academy. Many of them are mundane, like candles with the ability to burn for weeks on end. Others, however, are extraordinary, such as spells used for healing wounds or disintegrating metal. Hours pass in the blink of an eye, leaving me with a dull pain in my lower back from hunching over the book. I barely notice the pain, as the wealth of knowledge before me is too tantalizing to ignore. I keep reading, taking notes and marking pages that seem particularly useful to me, the tips of my fingers stained black with ink. The door to our residence unexpectedly opens, and Owen steps inside, looking more dour than usual. He walks over to the couch across the room from where I'm studying and sits down heavily, looking over at me with his brooding eyes. "Rough day?" I ask, glancing up from my book and flipping a page. He grunts in reply, leaning back and sinking deeply into the cushions. Night has fallen outside the great cavern, but as always, it is almost impossible to tell within the city. Owen had spent much of his day with the recruits who had been called from the city's populace, along with Talon and Elias. I'd chosen to spend most of my time inside, researching spells and attempting to learn new ways to use magic in the upcoming battle. Without any further comment, a silence settles between us. Something is clearly bothering him, but he doesn't seem to have the ability to verbalize what he's feeling. Giving him a friendly smile, I try to engage him in conversation. "I've had a rather productive day, if I do say so myself." His eyes flick over to me.
"Really? That's good, I suppose."
"Come here for a moment," I beckon, thumbing through the pages of the spell book to a spot I had marked earlier. He pushes himself up and walks over to the table, plopping himself down across from me. He frowns when he notices the book I'm reading.
"Don't you ever get tired of looking at books all day?"
I scoff, smoothing out the page and peering up at him, giving him an exaggerated roll of the eyes. "Reading is one of the most important things that a person can do," I reply. "Without books, we would be little more than cave dwellers, hunting to survive and making very little progress at all."
We're sort of cave dwellers right now, he mutters sarcastically. I ignore his comment and point to a section of text. Here's a perfect example, something I just learned today. A spell that can be used to bind broken bones using radiant magic. Sounds rather practical, doesn't it? He leans forward and examines the words, grunting with begrudging appreciation. That would be useful, he admits. Though, I've never heard of radiant magic being used to heal anyone before. I sigh, pulling the book back over to me and flipping to another page. That's because the Conclave has outlawed the experimentation of magic on human hosts, and why we know precious few medical spells. It's a shame, really. The greatest magical minds in the whole world are being outpaced by three old mages living in the mountains. I point to another section of text. This one also caught my eye. Owen scoots over to sit in the chair next to me and squints down at the open page.
What is it?
An artifice, similar to the Ark of Radiance, I explain, growing excited. Edna read about it in one of the histories, an ancient device supposedly used to kill demons. She hasn't been able to test it yet, but she thinks that she figured out how it works.
A device used to kill demons? Owen asks, perking up.
I nod eagerly. It's created by enchanting a source crystal, similar to how the Heart of Light was made. Only, instead of summoning a shield, it creates some sort of explosion capable of destroying the R'lar without harming humans. I imagine that it would take a tremendous amount of power to develop this kind of artifice, as well as a vessel large enough to contain it. If the Arcanius hypothesis from the Book of Magical Law is correct, which I believe to be the case, such a thing would be nearly impossible to create, though it does present some interesting implications. Of course, one would need to delve into artificial theory in order to fully understand. Glancing up, I notice that Owen's eyes have begun to glaze over, the spark of interest I had conjured all but snuffed out by my ramblings. I blush and give him a self-deprecating smile. Sorry, I say, brushing a lock of hair out of my face and tucking it behind my ear. Sometimes I get carried away.
It's all right, he replies, blinking his vision back into focus. I'm just tired. It's been a long day.
Flipping to another page, I change the subject to something that might better hold his attention. There's something else, I continue, finding a place I have marked and pointing to a specific paragraph. Remember how we were talking about bad dreams before?
Owen frowns. Yes, I remember. The three of us have been having nightmares ever since all of this began.
Well, I explain, looking down at the words scrawled in the book. I think I've stumbled upon a reason for this phenomenon. Edna, it appears, has a deep understanding of demonology. He follows my gaze expectantly. When we were first in the Emberwood, I cast a spell to track the Darkhound that killed those deer. Do you recall? Owen nods. Demons leave behind a latent energy called Inferni. It's sort of their life force, though that's a crude definition. Using radiant magic, I was able to expose the Darkhound's Inferni to confirm its presence. Listen to this. I clear my throat and begin to read out of the book. One of the most curious accounts from the historical records has to do with the ethereal substance called Inferni. Inferni was the magic used by demons to enslave the minds of men. It oozed from the R'lar like a stench and stuck to everything it came in contact with, including people. Those in contact with demons reported a wide variety of symptoms for weeks and even months afterward, including depressed moods, illnesses, and horrific nightmares. It is unclear whether these symptoms were treatable. Looking up, I see that Owen's face is scrunched up in thought.
So, he says slowly, these nightmares we've been having are caused by the demons?
Precisely,
Again, I'm unable to keep the excitement from my voice. Being around the Rallar seems to have an effect on people, making them angrier and more distrusting, the Inferni even invading their dreams. It means that it isn't just us, and that the presence of demons may be one of the reasons why we're having such a difficult time bringing the King and the Nightingales together. Light, the whole kingdom could be influenced by the Rallar.
Owen's frown deepens, and after a moment he responds.
That's really interesting, Zara, but I'm not certain what knowing this accomplishes. Now we know why we're having nightmares, but there isn't really anything we can do about it, right?
I deflate, but only a little. I suppose that's accurate, I reply sheepishly. Still, I'm happier knowing the cause of these dreams. Perhaps now we can start exercising some control over them.
Owen nods and leans back in his chair, rubbing his temples as if he has a headache.
Light, this isn't helping, I think in chagrin. Something's clearly happened to him today, and I've been nattering on like a buffoon.
I give him a concerned look.
Is everything all right? You seem a little off.
It's nothing, he replies, trying and failing to appear stoic.
Come on, I press, leaning forward. There's something wrong. Tell me. Perhaps I can help.
He eyes me for a moment, then shrugs.
It's just something Elias said. That's all.
You spoke with Elias?
My eyes widen, but I do my best to mask my surprise.
Yes.
Well, what did he say?
He had some things he wanted to tell me. You know, before the battle begins.
I let out an exasperated breath.
Light, Owen, it's like pulling teeth trying to get you to talk. What exactly did he say to you?
He sighs and mutters a curse under his breath.
Fine, he says in resignation. He wanted to tell me about my father.
Your father? He nods.
He told me about how he and my father were friends in their youth, how they were rangers together. Then he told me about his death.
Owen proceeds to tell me the entire story from start to finish, divulging more details the longer he goes on. I sit quietly as he speaks, not voicing any comments or questions.
Right now, I just need to be here for him.
The worst part, Owen finishes, taking in a shaky breath, is knowing that my whole life Elias has been taking care of me. He supported my mother and me when I was a child, and he took me under his wing when I decided to become a ranger. It almost makes me angrier. Not at him, but at myself for being so weak.
He lapses into another silence, and surprisingly, looks to have tears brimming in his eyes. I bite my lip, feeling heartsick at seeing him in such a state.
I'm so sorry, I say softly, trying hard to come up with something meaningful to say.
Truly, Owen, this is a difficult thing to go through, but you are not weak for feeling this way. He sniffs and looks away, still trying to play things off like he isn't vulnerable.
It's all right, he replies huskily. I'll get over it. I just need a little time to sort through my thoughts.
A thought suddenly strikes me, and I think back to the conversation we had in Ormkirk.
Perhaps, I begin, you don't need to sort through anything. Perhaps all you need to do is forgive.
He grunts.
Light, not this again.
It's true, I reply, gaining more confidence.
Reaching over, I rest my hand on his arm.
Remember what I said about anger, when we were standing by that hot spring? That it's like mage fire? Well, the only way for you to get over all of this is for you to forgive. Not only Elias and the Nightingales, but yourself. When you finally let everything go, you'll be able to move forward. You'll have peace, Owen.
My words seem to have an effect on him. He looks away and shifts uncomfortably in his seat.
You sound like my mother. She would always lecture me about things like this.
For some reason, the comment makes me smile. She sounds like a wise woman.
She was just as stubborn as you, Owen says, smiling as well. Though I'm not sure how that's possible.
You know I'm right, I chide, inching closer to him. Elias is imperfect, and the Nightingales are just like anyone else. There are good ones and bad ones in the mix. When you swore your oath, you promised to protect the realms of men, rebels and all. Then, in a lowered voice, I add, the world may be coming to an end, Owen. There's no room for anger in your heart. He stares at me for a second, then chuckles and shakes his head.
Throwing the Ranger's oath at me, are you? That's low.
I grin. I'm not above such things. For a moment, we sit there looking deeply into each other's eyes, the silence of the darkened room enveloping us as the fire in the hearth burns low. The realization suddenly dawns on me that the two of us are rather close to each other, and that my hand still rests on his arm. He seems to feel it too, an anticipation in the air, like a spell, binding the two of us together. His green eyes, so dark and soulful, glance down at my lips, then back, and I can feel my heart beating faster, fluttering restlessly within my chest. Light, I think, feeling another blush coming on. Is it getting hot in here? We both lean in, our faces inching so close that they are almost touching. A feeling more powerful than any magic grips me, filling me with wondrous expectation. Then, without warning, he backs away, clearing his throat uncomfortably and averting his gaze.
I should probably go get ready for bed, he says,
pushing his chair back and standing up.
It's been a long day.
Oh, I reply, trying not to let my disappointment show. Yes, of course. He turns and heads for the stairs, but hesitates just before going up.
Thank you, Zara, for listening. I'll try to find a way to forgive them, and myself, I promise.
Smiling wanly at him, I wave as he departs, disappearing up the stairs and leaving me alone with my spell book. That wasn't just me, was it? I can't help but feel a little self-conscious over what just transpired. Light, it really felt like he was about to kiss me. Sighing wistfully, I open my book and attempt to continue reading. As I begin, however, I'm unable to focus on the words. Forest green eyes muddle my thoughts, making me hopelessly and blissfully distracted.